Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. Joining me is, as per usual, Dave McKenzie. How are you, Dave?
I'm pretty good. And, you know, days like this, you feel like you can take on the world, don't you?
Yeah.
You haven't done much, but because of the circumstances, I think we can say that.
Yeah, and before we set the tone of this podcast, I just want to say we are in Barceloneta. Barceloneta is the finish of today for the 18th of July. Pretty town.
Yeah, we're in a little square.
Nice little square.
There's a couple of outdoor bars and cafes happening. People slowly milling out from the race finish, Lycra. Yeah. Sort of bikes.
There's a carousel ahead of us.
Yep.
And the reason why I want to just point this out is that this is the Alps being alive because of the Tour de France.
Yeah.
A day like this, you've got, you quadruple the capacity of the town.
Yeah.
Everybody is in their Lycra, their bike. You've got kids on their bikes, mountain bikes. It's not just road bike as well. This is what I wanted to say. A lot of mountain bikes, a lot of trail bike. It's a festival of cycling.
Yeah, it is. And it's so true. And it was a beautiful stage, you know, visually. It was amazing. And our drive here from the start, it was a lot shorter because the race, you know, went the long way from Gap to get to the finish line here. But yeah, these are the days you love, actually.
Yeah, 100%.
And it wasn't a mountain day, and we love the mountain stage.
Yeah.
But this was a really just a nice stage.
And you know what, Maka? I want to do something a bit unusual today. But before we start dissecting the race, let's listen from the winner of this stage. This is Victor Campenaerts. Get the tissues ready because it's quite emotional.
Yeah, right. As a real professional, you have to ride the Tour de France, finish the Tour de France, and winning a stage in the Tour de France is everybody's dream. And I'm not a Neo Pro. I've been dreaming about this for a very long time. After the classics, Open Classic, Flanders Classic, I had a very difficult time. I had a verbal agreement with the team about extending the contract, and I got ignored for a long time, and it was very difficult. I was on a long altitude camp, but my girlfriend was there. She supported me every day, highly pregnant, and I was struggling to finish my training schedules, but I changed my mind. I have a bright future now still in cycling. I became a father and was like blue skies, only blue skies. I started to feel very good on the bike, and coming to this Tour de France with a super motivated team, we have a super good atmosphere in the team. This is just the, you know, the summum of this atmosphere in the team, and we're gonna celebrate tonight.
This is a victory for your son. This is a victory for your wife, I suppose.
The wife is my girlfriend. Is not my wife.
Sorry.
Not yet. But this is the support I have from my girlfriend is incredible. She's always there for me. We went 9 weeks on an altitude camp. She was highly pregnant. She gave birth to our son at the bottom of the climb in Granada. She is the hero in this story. I'm so grateful that she made this possible, that the team made it possible, that I have the super long altitude camp to prepare this Tour de France. I get a lot of faith of the team, and also because of the birth of my son, I didn't do any preparation race leading into the Tour de France, but I had the faith that I will be in a good shape. I will be leaving the team, but I'm so happy that we can finish off with the maybe the highlight of my career. It's a super nice way to to leave the team and to for this Tour de France. Again, we will celebrate tonight.
If you're not crying, Maka, you're not human. And this is what summarizes really well what the sacrifices people have to do for. I mean, you and I are crying almost doing this
I'm
podcast.
Holding it back. It's crazy.
it's crazy because there's so much emotion in this interview. And Victor Campenaerts, there's no one that can be more deserving than today, Victor Campenaerts winning this stage.
Yeah. And to stop myself from crying, I'm gonna take a tiny bit of credit for his win.
Okay.
Because I interviewed him this morning and I said to him and I was thinking, when the riders come up, I don't write notes, it's all in my head, as it is with you. And
this is why sometimes we saw, you know, searching our words or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But he was coming towards us and I hadn't asked for an interview with him pre, and I thought, oh, he'd be a good one. I thought, actually, he this is up his alley. So I thought, what would be my opening question to sort of get him, you know, prick his ears up and get a reaction? And so I said, Victor, Michael Matthews, Nuns Peters, Magnus Cort, someone else, Victor Campenaerts, you're on my hot list for riders to win today. And he goes, oh, well, thank you very much. I have goosebumps. And thank you. I feel very privileged.
So you gave him goosebumps and now he's giving you more than goosebumps.
I love it. And, you know, he's been we've enjoyed. I've interviewed him about 3 times now. And obviously the first time I wanted to ask him about Jared Drizner's.
Yeah.
And he spoke so, you know, really well of Jared. And it was such a great sort of interview. And I made a point of thanking Pauline, the press officer, afterwards, and just said, that was so nice. It was, you know, and he gave plenty. Now he's won. I'm so happy he won. I'm really just delighted that he won.
And if you've seen the footage on TV, straight after crossing the line, I don't know who, some genius had this idea, but absolutely fantastic. We want more of this. But someone handed up a phone to him, and that was his girlfriend or his wife and their newly born baby. And he was
on I'm video, almost, I'm almost on a quite, WhatsApp yeah, video.
Yeah, and I'm almost quite, and oh it's no God. Joke. Like I can certify you that Maka.
If you're almost crying, this is heavy. I cry at least twice.
But that was just. I mean, wow. Go back and watch it if you can. The highlights, because it's such one of the. This will be a shot for the years. You know, this would be what memories are made of.
You know, we're talking about on the way in today, and crowds of fans, we were on the last sort of 20-odd kilometres. Yeah. We hit the course and we had to come in on the course. And the people are waving. And we weren't tooting the horn. Normally, once people start waving, we give the, you know, toot the horn. It's like this festive atmosphere and everyone's in a happy mood. And you said, we sort of made a joke. And I said, yeah, ASO, they go along with a spray can and spray happy juice and it makes everyone clap their hands, and you know, as a joke. And you said, it's good though, isn't it?
It's
really good.
It's the festival of smiles.
And this is, you know, with a lot of bad things going on in the world.
Yeah.
For the month of July here, we're so fortunate to be on this, and so are all the people roadside that get to come here. And, you know, you good Australians, if you've been here, you'll know what we're talking about. That just that great atmosphere that you get. And then it tops off with a victory like that. And you say, our day's complete.
And this is where you realise this is so much more than the back race.
Yeah.
This is also entertainment with everything that encapsulate entertainment, from emotions, from you and I. Honestly, we're almost having a cry, and we are both having.
I'm holding it back. I'm trying to be macho man.
Our eyes. I'm not quite happy with the podcast because
I balanced them a bit.
No, let's down, mate. But I mean, if he was filmed, we could see that our eyes are actually quite watering a little bit. But it's all this capsule of emotions that you're getting, from crying, from, you know, the joy, the laugh, the tears. This is what cycling is all about. It's not just about who goes fastest on the... It is about who goes fastest on the stage.
Yeah.
But this is, like, it's mind-blowing how much more this is.
Oh, it's huge. And, you know, Victor Campenaerts now, he'll go back to Belgium at the end of this tour, and he'll be... He was a star anyway.
Yeah.
You know, he's won a Giro stage. He's had some good victories. He's been a super loyal domestique. And as he said in that interview, there was a point when his contract was on the line.
Yeah.
About 4 years ago, and he wasn't going to get.
He's leaving
signature.
The team though.
He is leaving
Lotto Destiny at the end of the year. What a way to leave the team.
What a superstar. Mm. What a superstar. It's
Let's go back and just dissect a little bit the race itself for the people around here that I've got no heart. You know, people, I'm kidding. I'm just teasing you, the public. But there's also a bike race. But honestly, this was, we knew, and you said it, it was going to be a day for opportunists, for the breakaway.
Yeah, I said 99.99%.
Fair go to you. When we were on the road, we just go, okay, update, let's have a look. Pretty much everyone you mentioned yesterday was in that breakaway.
Yeah.
Textbook breakaway.
Except Nard Peters, who I'm annoyed at because I picked him in the tipping comp.
Well, he was a good get, but like, you can't be 100% all the time.
No. I was pretty happy with that. And look, it was, when you've been in the sport as long as I have, you get to this point, you start to know, okay, these are the guys, because it was their last chance. Not all of them. Jai Hindley's still got a chance, and we'll talk about the Aussies, and I'll just mention both of them quickly. Michael Matthews, realistically, this was his last chance. He can't climb in those big mountains the next 2 days. Jai can in a breakaway. So for a lot of those guys that made that break today, like Victor Campenaerts, this was their last chance. Yeah. So, wow, to get it 3 days out from the finish.
And it's a good win. I mean, remember, Belgium has got a good contingency here. I think it's 29 riders was at the start anyway.
Yep.
So it's a win for Belgium. It's always a win for Belgium.
How many wins have they had here?
Ooh, I'm not too sure. I'll have to go back to say. But what I'm saying is, a win for Belgium is a win for cycling.
Yes.
It's a country that loves cycling so much that when Belgium win, the world of cycling wins. Would you agree?
Yeah, for sure. And, they haven't had many, because Poggs won three.
Yeah.
Gomez won three. Philipsen's won three. There's nine, at least. Yeah. Vingegaard's won one. There hasn't been too many Belgian stage wins here, if at all. So, no, as I said...
That's just the proof that we don't make nuts.
Yeah. as we said, he'll go back to Belgium a hero.
Yeah.
Before he was a star, he goes back a hero.
Before we talk about the two Aussies that are in the top 10 of this stage, I just want a quick mention for Verche. Finishes second from Total Energies, French rider, not just because he's French. There's a couple of things that are quite interesting here. He launched the sprint very early. He attacked. But then he sort of calmed down, went back, and then thought, okay, this is not going to work out. I need to be. He finishes second on the stage. Quick thing here, though, when the Tour de France started in Italy, he was the first rider dropped of the first attack of the Tour de France.
Really?
Fast forward 18 stages, he's second on the stage.
First rider dropped. He obviously, he obviously made the cut.
Yeah. So he was the first rider
that day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So fast forward 18 stages, he's second here. That proves that your form can increase and change.
100%.
But that also proves that these riders, they take one day at a time. Well, and then a loss one day doesn't mean you can't win the next day.
The old Matty Heyman theory, just keep on riding.
Yeah, keep on pedaling.
And that's how he won Paris-Roubaix, just keep on riding. And it's such a great, and it means so many different things, because it can mean that in a one-day race, just keep on riding. But then in a tour, just saddle back up the next day. Keep on riding. You know, in your training, months out, you're having bad days. Like Victor Campenaerts said, just keep on riding.
Keep on riding.
That's an awesome story. And, you know, to sort of just on top of that, they both got the better of Michael Kwiatkowski. A guy who has won he's won monuments. He's been world champion. Okay, he's at the back end of his career. But I reckon all of the betting would have been on, of those three coming in the last kilometre, most people would have thought Kwiatkowski would win.
Do you know a slight anecdote? Yesterday I was, not to rub it in, but yesterday I was in the Astana car, as you know, with Mark Renshaw, and in the Gruppetto there was Kwiatkowski with Cavendish. He was there. And right there in the car, I thought, what is Kato doing here?
Yeah.
He shouldn't be here.
Up today.
Is he basically planning for the next day? I still didn't pick him in the tipping competition, because I wanted to go Aussie and I just really wanted Michael Matthews to win this one. But you're right, Kwiatkowski is smart about his riding.
Yeah.
I know a lot of the riders do this, but seeing him finish almost last yesterday was a sign that today he could actually be.
He was on. Yeah, it's super smart. And look, it's been happening for years now, as in riders do that. But it's, you know, probably 10 or so years, probably more than that even, but this is also part of how the sport's evolved and you know, strategies and percentages and those you know, you know, little elements, 1%ers.
Small gains,
marginal gains is what I was trying to say. And that's where it's different. So when you get a guy like Kwiatkowski yesterday, makes sure he's in with the back group, makes sure he makes a cut, but just by enough. And a guy like him of his calibre, he can actually then ride fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like Cav is suffering because he's just not a climber at all, as we know. But Kwiatkowski, you're right, he saved so much yesterday, so then he knew he was on his A game today.
Yeah.
So, and again, it just puts even more, you know, into the win of Campenaerts and Verschaer coming second.
Jai Hindley is 8th on the stage and Michael Matthews 10th, so top 10 for two Aussies. Let's start with Jai. Jai has had a difficult tour. Okay, lots of up and down. We can say fairly say this, but how was he today?
I spoke to both of them at the end. So, firstly, I'll say on Jai, he was philosophical, I suppose. Sure, he was a bit disappointed because he was a bit closer than Michael was to getting across to those three, and they weren't too far behind in the end, just 20-odd seconds, 27 seconds maybe. They just couldn't get there. I don't think he did too much wrong, but he was, you know, he was a little bit frustrated with the way the group raced it out. He knew it though. It was almost a 40 rider breakaway group. It was 36 riders. And on Michael, on the other hand, very similar. They were both probably similar. Michael was probably sounded a bit more content, you know, frustrated, of course. Mike, they've both won stages here now. Michael's won a few, as we know. But Michael was pretty content. And he said, I could only make the decisions, you know, I could make, so to speak. And, you know, He and Matty Heyman talked about, you know, hoping that a couple of groups would come back and then it would sort of reset and then they could relaunch Michael or he could relaunch. But they were both, Matty Heyman was happy with Michael's performance considering, and Michael, I think, in the end was pretty content with the way he raced. And I think when you get to the finish line like that for both of them, you know, they'll sleep on it tonight, they'll get some dinner in, get a massage, and by tomorrow morning, they'll probably wake up and go, you know what, my legs are pretty good and I gave it a good crack yesterday and let's go fight for another one again.
Yeah.
He'll survive.
Yeah.
I think Jai, maybe not tomorrow because I think he would have put a lot into today, but I think the penultimate stage, Jai could.
There's still a lot to come and we'll talk about this in the second part of our podcast, but there are still a lot to come. GC, it wasn't a battle.
No changes
today. No changes whatsoever. They sort of stabilized themselves in this position because, like I just said, there is a lot of mountain to cover and a lot of tactics to happen as well. So we don't really have anything to say except the fact that it's just status quo at the top.
It was like a RDO today. Yeah. Rostered day off for the GC guys, sort of.
Paid or unpaid?
Still paid, should be too. They still had to do it, but you know, it was a casual day at work sort of thing. So, and you saw that with the gap out to 10 minutes. I think all the GC teams knew not too much would change, even if they'd raced full gas today. So they were content to get themselves ready for the next 2 days, which we know are big.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, we take a short break, and then when we come back, Maka, I was lucky to talk to someone that you know a little bit about, someone that's been around the Tour de France for something like 20 years. Don't go away.
Ready to take your cycling adventures to the next level? Since 1975, Jayco has been proudly manufacturing in Australia and is the largest name in caravans, pop-tops, camper trailers, hybrids, motorhomes and campervans. With the largest service network in Australia and unbeatable access to parts and accessories, Jayco is here for you. Cycle by day and relax by night with your fully equipped Jayco to keep you out of the elements. Jayco is built here for out there. Visit jayco.com.au to discover the range.
Get the ultimate Tour de France experience with SBS On Demand. Download the app on your preferred device or connected TV to access the Tour de France hub. Enjoy full live coverage, stage replays, extended highlights, mini stage recaps, and bite-sized stage-winning moments. It's all available, anytime, anywhere, and streaming for free at your home of cycling. SBS On Demand.
Welcome back to the JCO and SBS Cycling Podcast. Now, Maka, you are the voice for us of cycling in Australia, but I've met the voice of cycling for pretty much every car and everybody around, Seb Piquet. Do you know him? You know him well, yeah?
I know him well enough. Look, he is. He is the voice for race radio. So he's in the effectively lead car and of the race. But he also does generally the flash interviews post-stage. Yeah. He does great interviews. I like his questions, and they're very...
The style is a bit quirky. It's a bit quirky as a style. Let's listen to Sébastien Piquet. You know Seb Piquet if you've been following the Tour de France, because he's the voice behind all the interviews you're getting on the podium. Hi, Seb, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Interviews... and Radio Tour.
Yeah, Radio Tour. The general public might not listen to Radio Tour. That's the thing. But I was in the Astana car earlier on this week, and you keep blaring the information.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, it's non-stop action, and I can't afford to have a siesta or to fall asleep in the car, because things happen all the time. You have the time gaps to give potential crashes. If a rider wants a bottle, I have to call the different DSs. So yeah, it's non-stop from start to finish. Yeah,
you have enough experience on this Tour de France to have a very founded opinion of what's going on. We are just a few days away from the finish. I'm not going to ask you who's going to win this Tour de France, but if you want to give me a hint, you can.
Honestly, looking at the time gaps now in the GC, it's looking very, very, and I'm going to add a very good for today Pogacar. I think he has it under control. I think he has also the team, and we've seen in the past few days that he has the upper hand, and he carries on attacking to gain some time on Vingegaard. So it's if I had some money to place on a bet, it would go for the Slovenian.
What's a day in your life? When at some point you wake up in the morning until you go to bed, it's very busy.
Yep.
Just summarize, what is it like?
So the idea is to get to the start village more or less 3 hours before. I have a coffee, I read the papers, I get ready for the stage, I look at the profile, I prepare the stage, how many points are up for grabs at this climb, how many points, where is the intermediate sprint, etc. Then I go to the mix zone to do interviews, basically for an hour and a half before the starts. I pick... I don't know, around 30, 40 riders that might be interesting for the day stage. So interviews with several guys from the peloton, including the race leaders and the jersey holders. Then into the car, radio tour for 3, 4, 5 hours sometimes. Busy as hell. And then as soon as we cross the line, get out of the car, I run to the podium area and I do the interview of the winner of the yellow jersey, the green jersey, the polka dot jersey, and the most aggressive rider of the day. And officially my day is over then, but then we go to the headquarters to check the results, and we're not at the hotel before, I'd say, around 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it's hard. You've got to love that job, yeah?
Oh, you've got to love it, and I love it, and I can't get enough. It's my 20th tour doing race radio, and to be honest, I was looking at the roadbook and looking, oh, only 3 or 4 stages left. This is going to be depressing when it finishes. So yeah, I love it, and I'm very fortunate to be in the red car number 2 behind the peloton or the group of favorites when it goes up the mountains.
Do you know people sometimes get the Sunday blues when they have to go back to work on Monday and stuff? But for you, it's the reverse. You will get the Sunday blues because work is, or at least that Tour de France is stopping.
Yeah, and you know, we get into a routine for 3 weeks where you know exactly what you're doing, where you're going, where you're going to have dinner, where you're going to sleep, what you're going to wear in the morning, and what your job is going to be like. Of course, there are always surprises, good surprises, bad surprises. But you get into this routine, and then suddenly on the Monday after the tour, wow, all the routine just disappears, and you have to think about what you're going to have for lunch, what you're going to have for dinner, and get back into a normal life. So yeah, there is that kind of blues, yeah.
And one last question. I said you've got a lot of experience, 22, you just said. Has this tour been living up to your expectation? When we looked at the parcours, when we looked at who was turning up, we had a four-way battle. Of course, Roglic dropped out relatively quickly, but there's still a three-way battle until this end of the tour. Has this lived up to your expectation from what you have at the beginning?
Oh, yeah, by far. And it's not over. We still have some fantastic stages around Nice and that final time trial from Monaco to Nice. So it's lived up to my expectations. And if you look at the gaps, okay, I was talking about Pogacar having a very interesting advantage, but still, the gaps are not massive. It's not 10 minutes, not 15 minutes. I mean, things can still happen, and that's exactly what we want on a tour. We don't want to have a winner with a 10-minute lead, and we know what's going to happen with 5 days to go. So, yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
As Luke Durbridge once said, we don't need Pogacar to have a bad day. We need Pogacar to have a bad 10 minutes.
Well, yeah, a very bad day.
Thank you, Seb.
Merci beaucoup.
So that was Seb Piquet, of course, from the Race Radio Radio Tour, or just simply the interviews that you see and hear on the live feed and the men's interview on the all the podium and the jerseys and so on. Anyway, Maka, stage coming up tonight on SBS, and it's a beautiful one.
Here
19th stage, day 19. We're going from Embrun, a magnificent lake in Embrun. We'll talk about this in a sec. And going to Isola 2000, Isola 2000. Pretty interesting as a stage. What do you make of the route?
Well, this is it. This is the one we've been waiting for, actually. It's it's been talked about since the very beginning of the race, before the beginning of the race. Two oars categories. So your old Citroen wouldn't make it up over those oars categories.
Fake. It's fake.
And finishing on Isola 2000, category one. So two oars categories, one category one, 4,400 metres. And again, you know what I love about it? 144 kilometres. So if you're listening to this back in Australia, and you know you've been pushing through on those late nights, here's one for you, 144 kilometres. This is going to be, this is where, if Jonas Vingegaard has any chance of winning the race, it's the next 2 days,
so
and it starts
if
here.
Nothing happens in the sense of Jonas Vingegaard smashing something out of Tadej Pogacar on that stage, most likely it won't happen.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. This is where it is. This is where Pogacar, you know, he gets through this with his whole advantage intact. He will be starting to dream about the
So how does Pogacar defend this?
Yeah, good question. I think they keep defending it the way they have. So they try not to put the riders on the front all day. They might have to, though. This is where they actually might have to do a bit more work on the front because of the big mountains. Probably the more question is not so much how UAE defend, how do Visma attack it?
Yeah.
How do they try and unsettle Pogacar? That is the million-dollar question. It's a hard one, and I don't know the answer. I think, send a guy up the road early? Maybe that's what they do.
Is it the stage where they're really, really going to miss Sepkus? Or really feel that they are missing Sepkus?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Let's remember that he was lined up to do this Tour de France, all the prep, all the planning was made with Sepkus in mind. Well, he pulled out just a few days before the Tour with COVID.
4 or 5 days, yeah.
And we know how much Sepkus has been a helper through and through over all the wins that Jonas Vingegaard had.
Yeah.
So in that sense, is it a stage where Sepkus will be, you know, really missed out from the team?
Hands down, he's missed from the beginning because of his qualities. And he's the second lieutenant for Vingegaard, so he's sorely missed. But credit where credit's due, Jorgensen is brilliant, and this is where he can step up. And, okay, so you've made me now think about the tactics more of Visma. Jorgensen in the break for me. Jorgensen goes up the road. There will be a break, I'm sure of it. I think so, unless UAE try and really sort of stifle anything at the start. I'm not sure they will. They'll be happy to let a group of 15 or so riders go. Jorgensen's got to get in.
So, in a way, Jorgensen attack is the plan for UAE to talk to Adam Yates and say, Adam, today you're following Jorgensen.
Yes.
End of story.
Yeah,
am I learning well?
No,
am I learning
you are. Well? Yeah, very good. No, I think that's right. I think... they either gamble. They either say, we're not right about Jorgensen, and we actually want you, Adam, to stay with Pog, just in case.
just in case he's having slightly off day, you're the next best climber on your day. So they might actually say, you know what, if Vingegaard's going to attack, we've just got to deal with it and let's have as many troops around Pog as possible.
Yeah, okay, interesting. So
there's a couple of ways to look at it. And they're all, in everything we've just talked about, I argue that they're all right. But you know, things change in the moment on the stage.
How does Remco change this?
He waits till the very end and tries to attack, I think. I think he waits till the final.
So his job, Remco Evenepoel, is to be there just in case something happens. He has to be there to give himself the opportunity to take it if it happens.
Yeah. And look, to be fair, I think Pog will wait till the end. I mean, he'll have his team driving it and what have you. So too will Vingegaard, or they'll be surrounding him. All those three are going to wait till that final climb. There's not going to be a big attack, I don't think, on the penultimate climb. Maybe Remco will. Maybe he'll actually try and put Vingegaard under trouble. I don't think so. But you can't discount anything in this race. And you can't, not so much discount anything in this race, you can't discount anything with those three riders, which is awesome that we say that. Years ago, you wouldn't have said that about the GC guys.
And we're saying this on day 19.
Yeah, exactly.
Not on day 5. We're saying this on day 19. So the race, and maybe people in Australia will think that we're crazy, but the race is still way, way, way far from finished.
Oh, 100%.
There's still so much to play for.
Yeah, it is. And if you flip the coin to the opportunist riders, even just the few interviews this morning, that the sort of one takeaway from all of them was, yeah, everyone's tired. Everyone says they're tired and, you know, half of the peloton or three quarters of the peloton are tired. And then somehow we find a way to race hard again the next day. So,
and the next day they still beat the expectations every day.
No. There's it's not over. The race absolutely is not over.
I want to also talk about the starting town, Embrun. It's absolutely a stunner. If you have to tune in for a stage, mind my words, the Embrun Vista that you're going to get.
It's a big lake, too.
It's a massive lake.
Can you swim in it?
You can swim.
Are we going early for a dip?
I hope so, and I want to swim in it because it's absolutely gorgeous. It's one of these turquoise lake of the French Alps.
Are you a Speedos man? Or
I'm not a Speedos man. Can you imagine me in Speedos?
I can. I'd love it.
Do you?
French colours. Yeah,
no, I don't.
Give us your feedback, people.
Hashtag, no, we don't want a hashtag.
We'll send a pic and we'll do a vote.
We're not. But believe me, get my words, trust me on this one. Embrun is absolutely a stunner. You want to be there from the beginning of that broadcast on the tracker or wherever you're watching it, because it's absolutely a stunner. Have I sold it enough?
I think so. Well, I'm actually pumped. I'm looking forward to
getting there.
And I'm looking forward to getting to the finish in Isola 2000 too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you, Micah, for joining us and on the road, and let's see what we can find to feed ourselves and enjoy these last few days of this Tour de France. Thank you, Micah.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.